Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry. I'm your co-host, Chris Wesley, joined by John Rinaldo. How are you doing, John?
I won't lie to you, Chris. I'm very tired right now.
Well, you know, it is 5:30 your time and 8:30 my time. And, you know, I feel bad for John because I almost stood him up twice now when it comes to recording these podcasts. I have to bring my kids to school. And in a perfect world, they would have been here 10 minutes before 8 a.m. But there were two major accidents on the way here. And so it was just kind of funny because I'm like, oh, great. John's going to think I slept in twice. And that's right. The first time I slept in, you know, past 8 a.m., which I forget how that happened because it wasn't a Saturday or anything. And poor John was up at 5, just saying this jerk.
Like, I went back to sleep, for the record. Yeah. We may have to schedule a different time to do this. I have to say, I've been so much more tired recently just because of life changes and everything like that, that I wake up in the morning going, okay, yeah, let's go. Let's get up. Let's go.
Well, you know, and you know what, you've gone through one of the major life changes. You know, people say some of the major life changes are buying a house, having a kid, moving, and the one that you've been a part of, and I have in the last year too, is starting a new job. You know, starting a new job is really tough, and because it's kind of like, all right, not only do I have to do work again in a different way, but it's a new type of culture, a new type of schedule, the people around you you're not so familiar with, so you're kind of like, you know, how do I move around this? And I think that's important to note, and that can be emotionally exhausting.
Yeah. Maybe we need to do an episode on that sometime soon, how we take care of ourselves through the transitions and changes in our lives.
Definitely. Yeah. But
what are we talking about today, Chris?
Well, you know, kind of on the flip side of that, it's the opposite. It's kind of hiring, you know. How do we know that we are getting the right people on our staffs, on our teams? You know, we talked a couple of episodes ago about volunteering and, you know, finding the right people for that. This is similar, but obviously the stakes are a little bit higher because we're talking about salaries and jobs and everything. And so today we're going to be talking about the hiring process, some best practices along there, and kind of some of the things you want to look for when it comes to building your staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we were just to get right in there, I think the first step, honestly, is we just need to slow down. I think there's a tendency that we have that we have a vacant position. Quick, let's fill it. Whether that's a staff person, whether it's a volunteer, we have a need and we need it filled right away. Mm-hmm. And through my years of ministry and administration and hiring and HR, when we do that, we make a mistake.
Right.
On the hiring process. And so I think the first step is we need to be okay knowing that that position is going to be vacant for a little bit. And it's okay because if we're going to take the time to fill the position with the right person, I think is the key. It is easier to take our time, hire the right person, and have the position vacant for some time than it is to quickly hire somebody, train them, discover it's a wrong fit, and then they have to leave for whatever reason, whether their choice or our choice. And then you have to go through the whole process again. It just creates so much more turmoil that I think it makes sense to just slow down, really think through the process, create an engaging process that's going to get multiple people involved in the hiring, not just the pastor or the parish administrator. We'll talk about that a little bit. But slow down.
Yeah, you know, and even to slow down before that, to go back, I mean, it's kind of like, why are you hiring who you're hiring? Like, why do you have those positions? You know, I've worked with churches before where it's kind of like, well, yeah, we need a youth minister and we need a DRE and we need a business manager. And my big question is, well, why? I mean, not that I disagree, but it's kind of like, well, why do you need those positions? And even getting to the titles of those, especially, just to kind of take you on a side tangent, one of my big things that I've been exploring recently is we have DREs, Director of Religious Education, but then we also have youth ministers, and we're somehow saying that youth ministry has no component of religious education or faith formation to it, you know? And it's kind of like this interesting thing. We have these titles, and the thing... what I'm going to say is I don't think we always know why we have those titles. And so before we even get to the process of, you know, putting out the job description and figuring out exactly how we're going to hire people, we have to know like exactly what kind of positions we want to fill. So I don't know if you would agree with that, John.
I do agree with that. And maybe we need to rename our entire podcast as the Start With Why, because I feel like that's, we've talked about that. We talked about that with volunteers. We talk about that mm-hmm. under vision and mission. And but I think it's right, because I don't think we spend enough time truly understanding why we do it, to rehash some of the things we've talked about a little bit. We go straight to the how and the what, and we don't spend that time asking that question. So I agree 100%. Why do we want to do this? Why do we think that this position is important for us, and why we need to move it forward? Now, I think we need to be clear too. I think it's a lot easier to justify a pastoral ministry type of position, like a faith formation director or a youth ministry person or whatnot, versus a more administrative type of role, whether it's administrative assistant, a receptionist, a bookkeeper, a business manager, a parish administrator. But the reality is that we need both. And so we're not going to talk about just one or the other. We're going to talk about both in the hiring process here. But, you know, this would be true for the pastoral side of ministry and church, as well as the administrative side of ministry and church.
Yeah.
And I think titles play a really interesting role. But I think the first step is really spending some time really accurately defining what the position is supposed to be doing and updating that job description. Because here's what happens. The person who just left that position was in it for 18 years or some long time, which what? Is great, which is great, yeah. Right? You know, but what happens over the course of that 18 years is the job description has never been reviewed in that 18 years. And we know every year, Chris, your position, my position, every minister's position morphs and changes and looks different every year. And that's good. That's the way it should be, because there's no stagnant positions. There's no stagnant jobs in ministry. So I've always been a fan of, every time there's a performance evaluation, review the job description as well and just say, hey, is this still accurate? Do we need to change this? Do we need to make this happen? How do we make this more accurate? The reason that I recommend doing that is so that we're accurately capturing what it is that people do. I don't think we're good at that in church, and dare to say we're probably not good at that in many fields in the world, business, entrepreneurship, whatever the case may be. So I think that's the first step. Really sit down and say, okay, what do I really need this position to do? What is it currently doing? Make sure we have that. And then what do I really need it to do? Do we need to change it completely? Do we need to look differently at it? And that takes time. And I would say that most of us have resources available to us, whether it's a diocesan office or whatnot, who can take a look at that.
Right.
One of the great things about being church is that there's, especially in urban suburban settings, there's 20 churches around just in a 20 square mile radius of where we're at. Do they have similar job descriptions? Do they have some things that we can beg, borrow, and steal from, so that we can kind of see, okay, what does their faith formation director job description look like, or youth ministry job description? So we don't have to create it from scratch, but let's take a look at, what does our diocesan HR office have? What do our fellow churches have that we can begin to create a job description that really makes sense?
You know, I feel like we could have almost a whole episode on job descriptions and reviews. And, you know, that's something that we're working on at Marathon Youth Ministry to help people do that. But, you know, let's just say, you know, because we were talking about the hiring process, let's say that, okay, people have taken that time to sit with their strategic team to discuss, all right, these are the positions that we need. This is what every role is going to do. Let's get to the actual, like, hiring process. I like how the first kind of overall step is slow down the process. Don't just react because there's a position that needs to be filled. In fact, there's that adage, be slow to hire and then quick to fire, which that's a whole nother episode.
We do the opposite.
Right. We're quick to hire and then we take forever to fire that person. But if you do the work up front, in fact, are you, not only will you find the right person, but you'll have less turnover in the long run, at least in a negative sense, like a firing. Mm-hmm. So we've got the job description. you know, we've consulted other churches or dioceses, even HR professionals, maybe in our parish. Where do we post it? Like, what, like, how do we get word out there? Should we be making a pulpit announcement? Does it go in the bulletin? What are, in your experiences, great places to search and post and look?
Great, great question. Everywhere. Should it be in your bulletin? Yeah. Should it be on your website? Yes. Should you make a pulpit announcement about it? Some of your best hires are going to come directly from your church mm-hmm. and from your community members because they know the community, they know the culture of your church, and that's a big deal because you can't, you can teach skills, right? But it, the culture is not something that you could teach. It's something that people need to live into. And so finding people within the church community really makes sense. So yes, I think you post it locally as much as possible. However, just because you can't find a good local person doesn't mean they're not a good candidate. And so right. posting it on your, you know, diocesan website, I think is really valuable. I think posting it on any national website, I think is mm-hmm. really good. You know, for ministry positions, you know, using some of the standard sites like Monsters or Craigslist or things like that, I mean, you can post it there, but when people are looking specifically for a narrow field like ministry, they're not going to those sites, right. you know, for yeah. those types of things. So I don't recommend those sites necessarily. There's also some sites like Indeed that do nonprofit postings, things like that. You might consider it and see what happens. But again, I think focusing mostly on the ministry sites and go national as well. There's a lot of great national organizations that would be willing to right. post some of this stuff. Like for instance, National Conference of Catechetical Leaders, NCCL, mm-hmm. they'll post anything and everything, diocesan positions, parish ministries, well, maybe not anything and everything, but I've seen a lot of diverse postings there. You know, certainly the National Federation for Catholic Youth Ministry, but there, I think there's a lot of national organizations, especially within the Catholic community, that is worth taking a look at and posting there.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point. Just even going back to Monster, like you're going to pay a lot of money to post there, and you might not get the results you want because it's not ministry focused. However, if you are trying to hire someone who might be a communications director or an IT person, or even a bookkeeper or an accountant, like you might need to look outside those ministry realms. Another place to sort of look, and this takes a little bit more of an investment, is, you know, going to the universities, local universities, and you know, they've got job fairs and everything like that. They've got obviously their job. I'm blanking on the name, but
job board.
Job board. There you go. where you go, where you're not only looking for recent grads, but alumni too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know here in Baltimore, we've got Loyola University, which is a Catholic university. And so that's a great place to look and post jobs. And we found, I know churches have found, you know, people who are looking for that career change into the nonprofit or ministry world that have a background in business or accounting, and it's because they went to their university to look at that. So mm-hmm. that would be another place that I would add. So we've talked about slowing down, posting everywhere. Now it's kind of like you get those first couple of resumes. Now, John, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast, but my wife is in an HR.
Ah.
And one of the things that she hates the most in the HR world is recruiting. Because there's just a lot of paperwork and processing to that. But, you know, we talk a lot about that kind of, we talk about being slow to hire or slow down. This is a huge part. Don't feel like you have to answer every single cover letter or resume. In fact, you know, if someone hands you a book and says it's their resume, it's probably not worth their time. And one thing she's advised me, and then as well as some of our clients, is that you want to have a cover letter that gets to the point of why you're a valuable asset. And then with that resume, you should be able to fit it on a page or two and really not go beyond that. And if you're someone like around our age, you know, in our glory years and everything like that, we shouldn't be talking about our high school jobs or things along that line. So that's a little advice for people who are looking for jobs. But at the same time, if you're hiring, you know, look at those things and be critical of a poorly written resume or cover letter.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of competing advice on how to do resumes and cover letters. And mm-hmm. I'm like you. A succinct cover letter one page for most positions within church ministry, a one page resume suffices. Now, if you are applying for an executive level role or something like that, right, that's a different story.
Right, right.
But 1 to 2 pages. And it should list a lot of things that you've done going way back. Now, to the question around hiring though, is how do I review those cover letters and resumes, and right, what do I know is a good one? What's a good one and what's not a good one?
Right.
So yeah, I agree. Don't need to respond to every single one of them. You're looking for reasons not to hire somebody especially in your initial screenings, right? So you talked about typos or poorly written resumes or even poorly formatted resumes. Like I probably would get along with your wife just fine, Chris, because I hate poorly written resumes. And sometimes it's not even just about the wording, it's about the format, all right? So if it's not formatted well, this is totally detailed, but I'm gonna go there. If you got one bullet that's off center from the next bullet, right? For me, that, maybe I'm harsh, but that's reason enough to go like, I don't know if I want to take this person. Why? What is that saying about the candidate?
Right.
Level attention to detail. Now, not everybody's. I am actually not an attention to detail type of person.
But John, I'm going to throw in here too, because you know this with your youth ministry background. It depends on the position, but if you have a youth minister where the bullet point is off just a little bit, I think there has to be a little bit of grace, because if you find an organized youth minister, they're probably a DRE, you know, because attention to detail is one of those things where, you know, hey, I'm gonna challenge my youth minister brothers and sisters out there and say, like, let's get a little bit more professional and pay attention to more detail. So I agree with you to a sense, but then also, you know, there has to be a little bit of that grace around the truth as well. We are a church after all.
But, yes, I knew you were going to go there. We are church. We should be merciful.
But this is the big but, where, you know, it's okay to be stringent up front because it's going to make your life a lot easier on the back end, you know? Yeah. So I think in the end we agree. And I'm just giving you a hard time because
I love it.
No one can see you right now, but you're like squirming in your seat as I'm talking about these different things. So no, but yeah, I think as you review those resumes, you know, be critical of them, and you don't have to respond to every single resume. I think that brings us to the next thing is like, okay, so you get a collection of resumes, go through them. You don't have to call every single person back. I mean, it's courteous to send them an email, maybe just saying like, hey, thank you for applying. You know, just so that they have closure and they're not calling you up over and over again. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to have an interview with them. It can just be a simple email.
Now. Right. And I think, again, because we are church and ministry, if you have people that are applying who are part of your church community, right, mm-hmm, yeah, that's a little bit different response, because we have to remember that church is not a job in the same sense as other jobs.
Right.
People get into this field because they are hopefully passionate about their faith and serious about their church. And so I think we do have a responsibility that may be different than the corporate world to respond to some of those things, especially if they're church community members, and say, and be passed on a response, because these are people that are coming and sitting in the pews every Sunday as well, right, potentially, right?
Yeah.
So I agree with that. And I think that's something that differs from maybe the corporate world from what we're doing in ministry. I am a big fan of having multiple levels of interview processes. So you don't just interview once. So say you get the stellar resume and the bullets are aligned and there are no typos, what are the next steps, right? Well, I'm a big fan of let's screen some folks out before we bring them in. And so what I would recommend, and there are a lot of different recommendations for this, but my recommendation is do a 30-minute phone interview first with just whoever the hiring manager is. So are you the pastor? Are you the hiring manager or the church administrator or whoever the hiring manager is? Do a 30-minute phone screen. you can find a lot out on a phone screen about the candidate, and you can save yourself some time and energy of bringing somebody in if they're not good. And you can find that out on the phone screen. And again, we could talk about some questions here in a little bit that you should ask, but a 30-minute phone screen and then an hour to 90-minute face-to-face interview if they pass the phone screen, all right? With just you to kind of dig in a little bit more. And then I actually would recommend a third phase. Now, some of you are going, oh my gosh, really, John, three phases to this? Yes, you need as much buy-in as possible. So I believe the third phase really is kind of a group interview. Mm-hmm. Who are the key players on your staff and in your church community who should be involved in the interview process because they're going to collaborate a lot together, or they, you know, a church member has got experience around this that would be good for you as the pastor, or you as the administrator, or the hiring manager to have. And I think that's something that I think that we miss. And what happens is, if you don't do a group interview process and you decide to hire somebody, and you bring them on board, now you have other staff members or volunteers who do not feel like they were part of the process and may have reservations about this candidate. And now they already are putting up the blocks, the walls, and saying, I didn't buy into this. And so now the onboarding of this new person has become just that much more difficult solely because you did not engage other people in the interview process. And that's why the group interview process is so important.
Well, and there's another part to that too. And it's the fanboy syndrome, as my wife likes to call it. It's basically, she's been in a number of interviews and I've been in a number of interviews before where the person like who initially, you know, makes the call, like falls in love with the candidate, you know, it's just like, oh, this is a great person. Or maybe this person has a reputation that they love and they wanted to bring them on board. The rest of the group there can hold them accountable and be a little bit more objective and just be like, do you want to hire this guy because you want to be friends with him? Or do you want to hire this person because he or she's the best person for the job? You know, and I think that's another aspect of it that sometimes we forget about. Yes, the culture and making sure that people feel included in the process, but also at the same time that we're just not hiring a person based on emotion, but on whether or not they are the right fit for the church.
Yeah, I agree. I have a perfect example of that. One of my friends years ago was hiring a colleague in a diocesan office, and there were three kind of final interview people that they were going for. And you know, when you get to that stage, you sometimes kind of have a gut feeling, or you maybe not have your mindset, but you're pretty close to having your mindset. And so he had these three candidates who came in and did the group interview process. And he was kind of leaning towards individual number one. What happened through the group interview process is that individual number one was very good as expected, but individual number three shined in a way that he didn't expect.
And although
he kind of had his mind set, it was the feedback from his interviewees, his other interview people, who basically said, candidate number one is really good, but candidate number three really kind of blew us away.
Right.
And this person kind of came out of nowhere. That was the other piece, right? Because this person was not a known entity to a lot of people.
Right.
But there was something about this candidate that everyone felt energy towards and made sense. And so it was the group interview, the final phase of the interview, that convinced my friend to go with candidate number three versus candidate number one.
Right.
And that's why the group interview process is important. And now I've been watching this individual in their ministry for quite a few years now, the one that was hired, and they're thriving in the position.
That's awesome.
And it's a great partnership. And so that is an example of an interview process gone well. And the leader trusting in the feedback of the other people they bring around the table to be part of the group interview.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's so important. And when that decision, you'll know it's right. And that's one of those things when everyone is on board and click, you'll feel good about it. And yeah, there's some risk to it too. Like someone could totally play you throughout the whole interview process. But if you have a multi-phase process, like you suggested, if you are critical with your with who you want in what position, you're going to weed a lot of those out, and the chance of turnover is going to be far, far less. You know, I feel like we could talk so much more about this, and obviously, like, we're kind of at that point where you want the onboarding, you know, going on, you know who you want. So basically, you make that phone call, you offer them the job, make sure you tell the other finalists too that, hey, thank you so much. But we're going in another direction. But in the end, yeah, you want to take your time. And so what we've discussed is you want to slow things down, you know, slow down the emotion that we need to fill the position right away. We need to get the person right away. Post everywhere. Make sure you're posting, you know, not just in online, but in your bulletin. As John suggested, you want to hire from within. That resume, be critical of it. If you're like John and you want to make sure those bullet points are exactly even and everything, that's great. But a little bit of grace and mercy is okay. But then, you know, go with a phone interview. Don't be afraid to do multiple face-to-face. Definitely bring in the team and have other people speak into that process. And again, if you're slow to hire, you won't be finding yourself, you know, posting job descriptions over and over again. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize, and this is a business thing as well as a ministry thing, where it's a lot harder to hire new people than it is to keep your current employees happy and satisfied. So you want to build that right team, because hiring process can be emotionally and draining. It can be a financial drain as well, and it can distract your team from what they're supposed to be doing.
Agree. Great summary. If I could add just a couple quick things, I know we're getting towards time here a little bit, and I don't want to go into onboarding per se, but I do want to say this. You interview three people, or you have kind of three finalists. All right. And you go through that group interview process at the end, and you decide that you have one strong candidate and the other two are so-so. So you want to offer the position to the strong candidate. Well, you want to do two things. One, you don't necessarily want to tell the other two candidates no until this person says yes. Mm-hmm. But let me say this, right? If you interview three candidates, one strong, the other two are so-so, but you feel like you're at the end of the process and candidate number one really decides to say no for whatever reason, I think we need to be okay to not be obligated then to hire candidate two or three because they were just so-so.
That's so, the bonus material right here,
guys. Yeah, there you go. This is, and I think we do that, right? I think we narrow it down to two or three candidates. Candidate one says no for whatever reason. Okay, I better offer it to candidate two. No, if you think candidate two is just not up to snuff for the position, then don't offer it.
Right.
That may mean that you need to start the process all over again.
Right.
Then yes, do that, because you're going to make a mistake. If you're feeling like you are settling for candidate number two, just because you've gone through the entire interview process with them, not good.
Right.
And so be okay with starting the process all over again. If candidate one says no and candidate two and three are just not up to snuff. Let me say one other thing. The questions that you ask are key. Don't just ask interview questions about how they do things or what they do. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. But this is church. I always get annoyed. I've been annoyed when I'm not asked about my own spiritual and faith journey. That's important, because if our ministry and if our church is about building disciples, then the people we hire should be intentional to disciples as well.
Right.
So don't shy away from asking those questions. And maybe some HR professionals are like, no, don't do that. But this is church. And honestly, that's an important aspect of who we are as church. And so asking about spirituality, asking about faith, how do you nourish yourself, you know, in faith? How do you keep yourself going? I think those are excellent questions to ask. And the other thing with questions, don't ask questions like, what would you do if?
Oh, yeah.
Ask questions. Tell me about a time when you dealt with et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you ask the question, tell me about a time when, you're requiring the candidate to talk about their previous experience. That's not theory. That is something that they've done. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for people who have experience doing what we're asking them to do. So tell me about a time when is a perfect way to start a question, as opposed to what would you do if? Because then I can just go off, well, I would do this, I would do that, I would do this. It could be spouting off a bunch of best practices, theory that maybe they've never done before.
Right.
So I think that's another piece of bonus material in terms of the type of questions you ask.
And speaking of bonus material, why don't we, for all of our subscribers, not subscribers to the podcast, but to our website, thechurchpodcast.org, we give them a list of sample questions they can ask during the interview process.
Oh, you're putting me to work. I like
that.
Well,
I didn't say you. I'm going to put my wife to work on this too. But yeah, for everyone who subscribes to the podcast, we will send you a sample, like top 10 questions to ask during an interview. And to subscribe, all you got to do is go to our website, thechurchpodcast.org, and you can subscribe right there and you'll be on our email list. And yeah, you'll get updates on episodes, but also behind the scenes stuff as well. But yeah, no, this is an important topic. Like we talked about, you want to take care of all this upfront, so you're not dealing with dysfunction, you know, down the line, and dealing with probably what I think is one of the most emotionally draining things. And that's firing and losing people, not just firing, but them quitting because it's not the right fit for them. So you want to protect that by creating a good interview process right there. And, again, we thank you all for listening to The Church Podcast. You can go to our website, thechurchpodcast.org. If you got questions, you can email us at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. Again, that's questions@thechurchpodcast.org. And you can always find us on Twitter. I'm at Chris R. Wesley. And John, you're at
John Rinaldo. And my website also, johnrinaldo.com, should be going live shortly, if not already live. So I'm excited about that as well. So there'll be a lot of great material and resources there. Podcast, obviously the podcast episodes will be there, but also blog posts and videos and things like that. And Chris, I know you got an incredible website too. So tell them about that.
Yeah, Marathon Youth Ministry, where we're helping youth workers and parishes reach the next generation. And that's why John and I have partnered up again too, is because we want to help churches do better. And that's why we're talking all things ministry. So anyway, thank you all again for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Later, everybody.